or lease from...
The royalty of college football is in assembly.
Oh, my gracious.
Yep.
How about that?
We just stepped on their face with a hot nail thinking rock for a nose.
And welcome to the College Football Country Podcast. Josh Parcell here, founder of College Football Country, CFBCountry.com. And I am back now after week one of college football in the books. We are here to talk with Peter Burns today, my guest from the SEC Network. He is all over the place all season long. He's on the SEC Network. He's on ESPN Radio. And he also hosts the Campus Conversation podcast several days a week on ESPN, talking all things college football. So Peter's a great guest. We're going to get into a lot of things. Recapping week one, we're going to talk biggest storylines out of the SEC and across the country, and what a weekend it was. So much to talk about. Not only today, but on Thursday night, Friday morning, you will have your gambling episode in your podcast app. We're going to have Chris Felica, the Bear from College Game Day, coming back, our first returning guest. And our second returning guest will be on the same podcast. Rossi Three Stacks is back to give you some more winning teasers this week. Hopefully you didn't listen to the UMass pick last week. We had a little bit of a chat with Ross. He learned his lesson. We're going to go from there. But we did go 5-2 last week with our picks, if you were following along on Twitter at Josh Parcell. So keep following along this season as we're going to win you guys money every single week, or most weeks. That's my goal. We'll see how it goes. Thank you guys again for listening. Huge week of college football, and we are going to get right into the interview now with Peter Burns, SEC Network host. Before I get to that, don't forget, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, download the podcast wherever podcasts can be downloaded, but tell your friends, spread the word, rate the podcast 5 stars, leave a review. It takes 20 seconds and it really helps me out. You guys have no idea how much I appreciate that. So thanks a lot. And now let's get to our guest for this episode of the College Football Country Podcast. And now I welcome on Peter Burns, SEC Network host, ESPN Radio host. You can find him all over the place this college football season. And this is my first in-person podcast. This
big,
is
nice. Huge.
Back in your backyard, nice little screened-in porch you got here. This is big time.
I like it. You know what? Just the weather's nice. It's kind of like this time of year where you're finally getting football. So it's like finally cooling down where it's not 115 freaking degrees. So yeah, got to enjoy it. Hell, a lot to talk about in week one. My goodness, what a good way to open up the season. It's unreal.
Unbelievable. A great weekend of college football. It's kind of funny. The best games were Sunday and Monday.
Right.
We had a good game Saturday, and all the excitement. We waited until after Saturday.
Ask Kevin Sublin if you think it was a good game, or Aggie fans. But yeah, I mean, I think with the college football playoff, Josh, we've gotten to the point where we have better games, better opening weekends, where you always used to be maybe you get one or two games. Now you probably have at least 8, 9, 10 games that matter. And that's huge. That's great for us as sports fans, because now, you know, to hell with the television side of it, why it's good for ratings, but just as like me and you, we're just college football fans. That's what we want to see. We want to see, hey, what are these two teams like when they're not playing Chattanooga or North by Northwest Oregon in the first week? Like, we want to see what Florida looks like in Michigan. Well, we learned Michigan's pretty damn good. We want to see if Alabama's going to reload. Alabama reloaded. So, you know, the fact that we get these great week one games is awesome. And I don't think there's no way we would have had that if the BCS was still here and we didn't have a college football playoff.
Totally agree. So on that note, you just mentioned Michigan and Alabama, probably the two most impressive teams of the weekend.
No.
But you can say one of those two teams, or you can say somebody else, but what impressed you the most? Was it a player, a team? Who impressed you the most this week that maybe you weren't expecting?
I start with Alabama, just looking at the fact that, you know, each and every year they lose 5 to 7 guys going to the NFL, and you're thinking, how in the hell are they going to get stayed this good? And like, we almost outthink ourselves as analysts, because we're like, this has to be the year that they really kind of struggle, right? That this has to be the year that something doesn't come together. New offensive coordinator in Brian Dable. And Jalen Hurts looked, honestly, like what people had problems with Jalen Hurts. Couldn't throw the ball really well. Wasn't very accurate. I think they only had like 98 yards passing.
Yep.
But we have just gotten to this constant where Alabama plays opportunistic defense. And they put themselves in short fields, and they put pressure. And it's like Mayweather in boxing. right? Whenever he had this unbelievable run in boxing, he would bank in three or four rounds right off the bat, and he would just put pressure and pressure, could counterpunch. Somebody was going to make a mistake, and then it just snowballed. And that's what happened. And unfortunately, we saw DeAndre Francois. What a huge ACC storyline that is now,
right?
That he's going to be out for the season. So I was impressed with that. And yeah, I mean, listen, I hate the Michigan hype going into the season, because I'm like, listen, Harbaugh has not finished better than tied for third in his own division. Not at his conference, in his division.
Right.
Although it
might as well be the conference, because the Big Ten West doesn't really.
That's true. Outside of Wisconsin, there really hadn't been much. But I was waiting to see what was going to happen with that. And when you have 10 suspended players, Florida's offense looked like trash,
right?
And something they need to work on. But yeah, I mean, Michigan, that defensive front was nothing short of fantastic. So I'll eat a lot of crow, because I didn't think Michigan. I thought Florida would win that game. When the suspensions happened, I backed off of that because I just didn't know what they were going to do. Not having Callaway and not having Jordan Scarlett were game changers for them. But frankly, even go back and look, and the second time I watched the game, I don't even know if those would have made a difference. I think Michigan's a real deal.
Well, here's what I want to say about Michigan is, you're right, Harbaugh's only finished third in the East twice. He's never finished
tied for third. Tied for third. Not even third by himself. Tied for third.
I get it, but at the same time, you look at what he took over. People point to all the NFL players that have come out of the last couple years out of Michigan and say, well, he had a ton of talent. Brady Hoke, it's not like he left the cupboard bare for Harbaugh.
Yep.
I think Harbaugh developed a little bit more of those guys at Michigan than what we would have seen from them had it been another coach. I think Harbaugh turned some of those guys into NFL players.
And I think he got newer blood in there that was better than the players that Hoke was able to get at Michigan.
I agree. So I actually think Harbaugh's done a fine job. I think trying to win the Big Ten East when you're going up against Ohio State every year is a problem. They blew the doors off of Penn State last season. It's not like they obviously lost the game to Iowa. They were inches away from beating Ohio State. I think Harbaugh is right there. Football is always a game of inches. It's not like Michigan was a distant third.
Right.
They were closing the gap. And this team's young. Only five returning starters, the youngest Power 5 team in 5 years, according to Phil Steele. So we thought that they would take a step back. But I think, and I wrote about this on Sunday, I think we tend to overrate the value of returning starters. I think it's great when you have a ton.
Absolutely.
But when you look at a team like Michigan and there's a ton of question marks, there's all those unknowns. But those unknowns, like Rashawn Gary, for instance.
Yeah.
Rashawn Gary didn't count as a returning starter.
But how
the guy
many,
was the number one player in the country.
I think returning snaps is almost a better way of putting it. I don't know if you can put that stat out there or outside of going like the Pro Football Focus or College Football Focus.
It's hard
stuff
one to
like
put
that
into context for most people.
Right.
It makes
because
more sense.
Just because somebody was a starter doesn't mean they were a very good, and it doesn't mean that they didn't have a plan to bring a younger guy who is much more talented and get him snaps, you know, in it during the, you know, the, when the second team comes on or situational. So yeah, I think returning snaps is so much of a better thing than returning starters, because trust me, there's a lot of programs. I saw something like Oregon was returning like 10 starters on their defense last year or from last year, and I'm like, they were like the 125th best defense. I mean, they had pretty shitty starters. So,
right.
I mean, just having 10 back
doesn't
really help. Right.
Exactly. And I think for Michigan, with all of that young talent, think about Jim Harbaugh. You can say what you want about what he's done in Michigan, but you can't deny the rebuilding job he did at Stanford, the amount of games he won at San Diego, even San Francisco. He's done more with less talent than he has on this Michigan roster now, in my opinion. So I think with an experienced quarterback in Wilton Spate, that young defense with Don Brown, who's maybe the best defensive coordinator in America.
He called a hell of a game.
Yeah, outstanding game. That front seven for Michigan is so good. I thought Michigan was going to be better. It's kind of funny. Like, there was this juxtaposition where they were ranked ninth in the AP poll, but people reacted to that and said, oh, Michigan's overrated because they were ninth. I actually think at nine was probably about right, if not a little too low, which is easy to say now.
I mean, listen, by the time this comes out, you know, AP poll will be out. I would imagine they're probably a top five team, five or six.
So.
I mean, and frankly, they looked like, I mean, Ohio State struggled in the first half, but they looked a little bit better in that second half. I mean, obviously, Florida State drops not only with the loss, but not having DeAndre Francois is a big changer. Clemson looked good enough. You know, I mean, they you know, the question was what was going to happen when Deshaun Watson leaves. Right. Well, we didn't really
find out on Saturday.
Yeah, we find out with Auburn, and we'll talk about that in a moment, I'm sure. But yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of surprises for me outside of maybe Texas. I was surprised how bad that defense looked. Obviously, the collapse by Texas A&M, just the whole state of Texas. I mean, we look at Baylor losing Baylor to Liberty. You know, I mean, that was just – I mean, that was – who had a worse morning? Aggie fans, Longhorn fans, or Baylor Bear fans? Who woke up Monday, or you know, went on Tuesday to the office and have been like, "All right, I'm not going to wear my gear."
I'd say A&M.
It's close, right?
To be up 34, at least Texas
44 to 10.
Yeah, A&M had the worst weekend to blow that game. Now, granted, you watched most of that game. I was busy watching the Virginia Tech game. I was flipping. We were doing the opposite.
Yeah,
I was flipping to the Tech game. You were flipping to A&M. You were flipping to the Tech game.
Yeah.
I mean, was Kellen Mond that bad?
Was that
the difference? It
seemed
to me.
He struggled. Well, you know what? He looked like a freshman. Yeah. I mean, I think Kellen is a more SEC caliber or just big time college football caliber talent than Kyler Murray was. Remember Kyler Murray? That was a quarterback for them a couple years ago. I think he's at Oklahoma now. Yeah. He transferred out. Kyler Murray was like this little like video game character, right? Like it looked like Trenton Holiday as a quarterback. Just go. But he wasn't big enough and didn't really have an arm. So what happened, teams did not respect the fact that Kyler Murray could throw the ball. Well, when Nick Starkel went out, redshirt freshman, they knew that the playbook got a lot more limited, right? So Mond being the backup, basically UCLA just said, you know what, we're going to put 8 in the box. We don't think you can pass it. And guess what? They couldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, it was – and then it was just a comedy of errors because, you know, Noel Mazzone, the offensive coordinator, I mean, for whatever reason, you got Travion Williams, the running back, and Keith Ford had already combined for over 300 yards rushing against UCLA. I mean, they're just killing it. There's 23 plays that the Aggies ran in the fourth quarter, 23 of them. Williams and Ford only touched the ball 4 times. There was 19 other plays in that historic fourth quarter collapse that they either threw the ball or Kellen Mond ran it.
Right.
And you're just thrashing them with Williams and Ford. It was it was baffling. And the only thing more baffling is how bad A&M's defense was in that second half.
Well, didn't they call a pass play, correct me if I'm wrong, on I believe a third down that would have set up a field goal?
The worst. First time I've almost like cursed on air on SEC Network. I mean, I literally had to walk out of the studio, and because it was the worst, one of the worst play calls I've ever seen in collegiate football. You're in field goal position. There's 4.5 minutes left. You're trying to bleed the clock. You got a freshman quarterback on the road. The momentum is all with UCLA. Even if you just quarterback sneak it or you give it to anyone, you're probably kicking a 30-yarder, and you pretty much ice the game. You're up by 17 at that point.
Exactly. We're 4 minutes to go.
And yet you decide to call a pass, and you don't really even roll him out. I mean, it was just kind of a haphazard rollout, and he takes a 10-yard sack. The field goal gets blocked, and the rest is history.
Yeah, I mean,
unbelievable.
This is going to be one of the biggest storylines going forward all season long. But with Kevin Sumlin, I guess my question is, does he make it through the season? Do you think he makes it? Scale of 1 to 10, what's the likelihood he's coaching in the last game of the year?
Well, on a scale of 1 to 10, see, it's such a loaded question because when we look at it, as far as you have to ask, have the players quit on him? That's what happens when a coach gets fired, right?
Right.
I don't think the players have quit on him. Are they going to be able to win games? Yeah, I mean, you look at they play. I don't know, like Presbyterian Tech or whatever that, you know, they've got Arkansas and South Carolina that are good games. They should be 5-1, 6-0 actually, going into the Alabama game.
Yeah.
You know, and so let's say they lose that and they can kind of, I mean, that's a 9-win season. I mean, this is a talented team. You don't go on the road to UCLA and put up 44 points in 3 quarters without being talented.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is the buyout. I mean, you know, it's the principle of it. I mean, that's why coaching searches and carousels are so tough to look into because there's so many different layers of the cobweb. Because I believe his buyout is something like $11.6 million, and the stipulation is that it has to be paid within 60 days. Well, that sounds astronomical, whatnot. Now, A&M has a lot of money. I mean, so I don't think that would be an issue. So long-winded way, it's still honestly to be determined because they're talented enough to probably still win 9-10 games. But the way that they lost that game, they'll never forget that. So when it does come time and that team falters, they're already always going to go back and look at – that'll be in one of the paragraphs, the leads of why he got let go when he eventually gets let go, is they blew a 34-point lead to UCLA.
It seemed like a microcosm of their seasons for the last couple of years. I mean, they get out to these hot starts.
Absolutely.
And the wheels just completely fall off. A couple of weeks ago, there was a rumor that I thought was ridiculous, and this isn't my question, so bear with me, about Dabo Swinney and Texas A&M. They're in, being interest on Texas A&M's side. They're going to go after Dabo, which is absurd. But I just raised the question then. I said, Clemson's a better job than A&M in my mind. And I want to know what you think if you start ranking the list of top 10 jobs. I think A&M is a top 10 job.
Clemson's a better job just in the fact that you don't have to go up against Nick Saban.
Well, exactly.
Except when you see him in the college football playoff.
Right.
I mean, I had Les Miles on my show this week, and I was asking him about, all right, so who do you like, Alabama, Florida State? And he looked me in the eye, and this, he said this on air. He goes, as long as Nick Saban is at Alabama, I'm not pulling. I can't pick against them ever in the SEC.
Right.
And so just by that, by proxy of not being with Nick Saban and being in not only in the conference but in the same damn division, I mean, there's no doubt. As far as when it comes to facilities, they're neck and neck. I mean, I've seen Clemson's new stuff. It's incredible. A&M stuff is incredible. As far as crowd, Kyle Field has a bunch. You know, Death Valley's pretty special. So, I mean, I see where there's some stuff, some similarities.
Similar programs, no doubt.
Yeah, but, I mean, listen, what is A&M supposed to say? No, we can't go after the best? Of course. I mean, A&M.
I don't blame them.
I don't blame them at all. You know, it's kind of funny. Of course, they're going to – they probably go after Nick Saban.
Right.
You know, I mean, or Bill Belichick or Greg Popovich if they wanted – you know, I mean, it doesn't matter. Though the name that I think is kind of interesting – if it ever changes, is, you know, Larry Fedora at North Carolina. I think he's got some roots in College Station in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that would require North Carolina having a good season again. I don't think they will as much as they did last year. But I think that would be a name that would be in play. And listen, I like Kevin. I think if he wasn't recruiting players, then I'd say, hey, you just don't have any talent. They got dudes. I mean, they have talent. People are excited about it. He's almost just a product of his success that he hit the ground running so well.
Exactly.
That all of a sudden you set the bar high where you have a Heisman Trophy winner. You've got the swag copter. And I think that's what it is. I think it's almost an attitude. I think Kevin Sumlin and the whole Aggie program is about having these unbelievable athletes, one, two, with these unbelievable attitudes, which you need.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what happens is that when they find success, they don't power through it like they haven't had success. That's what Alabama does.
I think Texas A&M is, they're like a child star. They got too big too soon.
It's fair.
And nobody expected Texas A&M to come into the SEC. When they joined the SEC, people thought they were going to be an afterthought. I mean, people thought that it was a nice move for A&M. You don't blame them for jumping, but people thought, no way are they going to be able to compete with LSU.
I don't necessarily buy 100% of that because I grew up in San Antonio. I knew that A&M had what it took to be an SEC caliber squad.
I mean, they beat Alabama their first year in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I'll put it this way. I thought it would take them 2 or 3 years. I thought it would take Missouri a lot longer if they ever be a part of being a contender. And of course, they've already won the SEC East twice, which was baffling to me. But yeah, I mean, I thought they had the tools, but you're right. They are a child star in the fact that they show up, boom, I'm the next biggest thing, and all of a sudden you're like, okay, well, what staying power do you have? And right now, they're still winning games. It's the way they collapse. I mean, think about it the other way. You go back and look at what A&M has done and what Arkansas has done. Remember the first couple of years, Arkansas just stumbled out of the gates, and then at the end of seasons, nobody sure as hell wanted to play Arkansas.
Right.
They were playing so well. I remember them shutting out LSU. I mean, they had some great games, but because they ended the season on a high note, Brett is looked at as like, okay, can't wait for next year. Well, you take it the opposite. Because Kevin Sumlin faltered and his team's faltered at the end, you know, he's looked at in a completely different light.
Let's move on to the ACC quickly here. Let's talk about DeAndre Francois, the impact of that injury. Now, they got Blackman as the true freshman coming in at quarterback. He was a three-star recruit. I mean, they had no depth. Tough. And that was always the concern at Florida State, I think, was you saw the beating Francois took last season.
On that offensive line.
You had to figure it was only a matter of time before, even if it wasn't a season ender, there was going to be points where he's going to come out of a game if last season was any indication.
Right. No.
And, of course, the worst happens, and now he's done for the year. To me, I think Clemson is clearly now they're holding the water in the ACC.
There's no doubt.
And,
zero doubt.
I mean, can Florida State – I was very impressed with their defense. I thought their defense played outstanding in that game. You saw – I mean, to be able to hold Alabama, they were in a ton of unfavorable situations. Alabama, how many times did they get the ball?
I mean, they were just a talented – they were almost as talented up front as Alabama.
I think so, too.
I mean, I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, I just think on the offensive side, Alabama's – Florida State's offense struggled, I think, to get things going. Mm-hmm. A little inexperience in the backfield. They obviously turned the ball over, and special teams was really the big key that swung that game.
Difference maker.
Totally. So for Florida State going forward, I mean, do you agree with me? Is Florida State out of the race in the ACC?
I mean, Clemson would absolutely have – I mean, it would be a dumpster fire. I mean, this would be an absolutely epic failure if Clemson does not win.
And they get Florida State at home.
It would be an absolute – epic failure by Dabo Swinney and the Clemson Tigers for them to not win the ACC now with Florida State being with DeAndre Francois being out.
I think so as well.
And that stinks. This kid's 180 pounds. You know, he's got to, you know, and I talked about this in our campus conversation podcast today with Ivan Bazell and Matt Schick, is the fact that an injury like this can hurt you for 4 years, not just this year. But what I mean by that is that Jimbo Fisher had a plan, right? Here's our plan. DeAndre Francois is our guy. We're going to – what's the kid's name? Blackman, right?
Yeah, Blackman.
Blackman's going to get an opportunity to learn. He's going to get a couple of mop-up reps, and we're going to put some weight on him. We're going to get him – and this is going to be – hey, this is the lineage. This is our game plan. Well, all of a sudden, now you got to put him in. I remember when Jared Lee got thrust into that position after Ryan Perilou got kicked off the team at LSU – Jared Lee was ruined because here is this freshman playing SEC teams, getting his head bashed in. His confidence was destroyed. And, well, they figured Jared Lee was going to be the QB for the future. So they passed on a couple other good quarterbacks. So, hell, LSU is a decade in, and they still haven't got the quarterback situation correct outside of Mettenberger coming in as a transfer. So this is not just a one-year injury for Florida State. This could potentially be a three-year, four-year injury.
That's a good point. And Justin Fields is the top uncommitted quarterback still in the recruiting cycle for next year. I know Florida State is in on him, but again, so is every other major program in the country. So Florida State, Alabama, Texas, all these schools are trying to get this guy. He was once a Penn State commit. If they don't get him in, where do you turn? Blackman, again, like you said, this could set them back several years.
The good news is, this is not like this was a like this was not Deshaun Watson not going to Clemson, right? Like this is, I mean, that ended up being a game changer for them. Florida State is enough of a program, and Jimbo Fisher is enough of a good offensive minded coach that they're going to find a quarterback. Now, LSU was not a good offensive-minded school, and that's why they've since struggled.
Yeah. Well, they haven't been one since they lost Jimbo Fisher, ironically enough.
Absolutely. No, there's no doubt.
So let's move on to this week's games. Some big games on the slate. First one, we'll talk about Clemson and Auburn. To me, biggest game of the weekend.
Yep, no doubt.
I think huge opportunity for Auburn coming off of a pretty good year last year. Jarrett Stidham under center. High expectations for that guy. And let's face it right now, I think Auburn has the better quarterback in this game. And I've said this on a lot of podcasts.
Yep.
I think I've said this on a lot of podcasts, whether we're previewing week one games or anytime. When you give me the best quarterback on the field, I like this team's chances. Even going on the road in Death Valley, Clemson looked good, but it was Kent State. I mean, what can you really learn?
Right.
They did what they were supposed to do.
No.
We know what we're getting out of Clemson. But how much of a chance are you giving Auburn in this game?
A very good chance. I said it a while back. I mean, the only thing that has shifted, and it's amazing when we make these predictions early in the season, right? Like how things change. I liked Florida over Michigan, but then all of a sudden 10 players get suspended, right? I like Georgia over Notre Dame a lot, and then Jacob Eason's out for an extended amount of time, and now that Jake Fromm, the true freshman from Georgia, is going to have to make his first ever start in front of Touchdown Jesus in South Bend.
Yep.
That's tough in a night prime time game. And so I really liked Auburn going into Clemson and thought they could win that game. But now Kerryon Johnson pulled up a little bit lame in that game. So that was their stud running back. So if that's a hammy issue, if you're Gus Malzahn, you have to decide, am I going to burn him here and risk him hurting it worse?
Right.
Or he sits down. And finally, Cam Petway will be back. And Cam is a running back that's built perfectly for a Clemson team, because Clemson, outside of Alabama, may have the best defensive front that we've seen. So I would tell you this. I probably lean towards Clemson now if Kerryon Johnson cannot go.
Right.
If you've got the 1-2 punch, I think it's enough. But I think that if you're looking for just – I think they'll just be – they won't have enough options against that Clemson defense, which I think is as good, if not better, than it was last year.
I agree.
Which is scary.
Totally agree, especially up front. And that's where I think Clemson has the advantage, because I think you've got to be able to get into the backfield. You got to control the line of scrimmage against Auburn, because they do so
well. And Auburn can do it with their – they've got a great offensive line as well, too, this year. So, yeah. I mean, Stidham's looked okay, not great, but I think that was more jitters than it was just lack of talent. He seems pretty calm and collected, so I don't think the moment's going to be too big for him. My question is when Cam Petway's not in the game, do they have somebody else that can run the rock and really extend the game? They need to slow this game down. They don't want to get this game into being like the Alabama Clemson over the last couple of years was a track meet. If that's the case, Clemson, should probably win by 2 touchdowns, but if Auburn can ball control, play smart, slow it down, they've got a shot.
That's going to be a really good game. I think Clemson wins. I think Clemson, the bigger problem for them, and you're going to call me a homer, I think Clemson's going to have trouble going into Blacksburg in a couple weeks because it's Kelly Bryant's first start. Clemson's no doubt the better team. But I think at home...
Tough place to play.
At home at Death Valley, I think Clemson's going to get past Auburn. I think the bigger concern for me is the Louisville game and then also Virginia Tech going on the road.
No doubt.
If they can get through those hurdles, that Florida State game, which was the most daunting one on the schedule before the season, all of a sudden...
Now Tech looks like... Now look like the Hokies and Fuente and those guys can get them rolling. I mean, it's amazing how much... We can spend 360 days prognosticating, and then all of a sudden, one injury or one little small thing changes everything. And that's and normally it's like week 4, week 5, but I feel like this year it was big time players, putting themselves in bad spots, but getting injured and really kind of changing the dynamic of these early games.
Well, you just talked about the other injury, the major one in the SEC, Georgia, losing Jacob Eason. Jake Fromm is making his first start on the road in prime time in South Bend. Notre Dame looked good. I think Notre Dame's going to be a surprisingly good team this season. I think they were – I mean, people forget how many games they lost by the slimmest of margins last year.
Yeah, four and eight should have been 7-5 probably.
Right. They weren't as bad as that record probably indicated. They got – Brandon Wimbush is a talented kid at quarterback.
Yep.
Adams, a great running back. St. Brown might be one of the best NFL prospects at receiver. That guy is an absolute freak.
Trust me, as an SEC guy, I wish Georgia had a wide receiver like him.
I can't imagine what he would have done in a system like that. But I like Jake Fromm. I liked what I saw out of him on Saturday. I've seen him, Peter, I went to the opening several years in a row. I saw Jacob Eason at the opening. I saw Jake Fromm at the opening. I don't take a ton away from seeing guys in shorts and these fake leather helmets playing out there playing 7-on-7.
Fair enough.
But the thing that impressed me the most about Fromm compared to Eason, I think Fromm has a better demeanor to play the quarterback position.
Zero
than Eason. I think he's got the natural leadership qualities, the charisma, the poise. And you saw it on Saturday. He stepped right in and, quite honestly, sparked Georgia.
Yeah.
I mean, they went three straight – I don't know if they were three and outs, but three straight punts before Eason got hurt. And then Fromm comes in. They put up 21 points in basically a quarter. And they really were on a roll from there. And to me, I wrote on Sunday, I think one of the biggest problems for Georgia now, it was a blessing in disguise there on Saturday to get Fromm to come in the game, a nice, capable backup. But now it's like, well, crap, do we have a quarterback controversy? If Fromm goes in and beats Notre Dame, you can't take him out.
I spent time in Athens, and no one ever told me this, but the feeling I got personally was the fact that down in Athens, you knew Jacob Eason had to be the starting quarterback, 5-star guy, was there, all made the sense in the world, NFL caliber guy, whatever. But if all things were considered, Jake Fromm ran the offense better. This is as a true freshman. He understood it better. The flow of it, of the game, was just a little bit better. Now, this, mind you, was in spring practice, but sure. I got reports about that in fall practice as well, too. I think Eason is extremely talented. I think he's got all the God-given talents of being tall. He's got the huge arm. I just don't know if sometimes the game doesn't come easy, like you have to try. I think Jake Fromm doesn't really have to try. He just does. Mm-hmm. Jacob Eason has all these amazing tools where it's almost like, okay, I have to make sure I do this perfectly. And this, you know, hey, listen, it's a blessing in disguise if there's a quarterback controversy in Athens for Kirby Smart. He would love to have that problem because that means that Jake Fromm played his ass off.
Yeah, and I just think the stakes are really high for Georgia.
Sure.
We're going to wrap it up here, but I think that the stakes – if Kirby Smart can win the East this season, and you look at how winnable the East looks right now. Florida,
Tennessee looked terrible.
Tennessee looks terrible. South Carolina may be the second best team in that division.
After week one. Hard to disagree with that. So, I would thought that. What'd you think of that win against North Carolina State?
I was impressed. Yeah. I thought the offense looked good. Jake Bentley played extremely well.
He's a good kid.
Deebo Samuel is one of the best skill players in the entire SEC. He could play for anybody. I picked South Carolina to win that game. I was surprised that State came in favored. I thought State had a lot more pressure on to win that game because the expectations. Will Muschamp, we want to see a step forward, or South Carolina fans want to see a step forward in year two. But NC State was thinking, I mean, Cole Kubelik picked them to go to the playoff.
Right.
What the ceiling could have been.
NC State kind of reminds me of the hype that people were giving Tennessee last year. Like, hey, kind of off the beaten path. I got to find somebody that's cooler to say than picking Clemson or out. But and offensively, the numbers don't look great, but I think NC State has a very good defense, especially up front. And South Carolina was able to do enough. My concern about South Carolina is that I don't know they had enough dudes on defense. Like, Sky Moore is great, but Muschamp does a good job of kind of camouflaging their issues. I think that you can get by that week one, but once guys start going down, I think you're going to see a real drop off in talent level, and I think that they'll struggle week three or four. They have to stay healthy. If they stay healthy, yes, they could be second best team. Hell, they could probably even make a run at the East.
Right.
I just don't know if any team anymore in college football stays healthy enough.
I agree with you, and I think that Georgia, to me, is the class of that division. I think that they're not that far ahead of everybody else in the division, but I think they are far enough. The gap is big enough between them and I think the other six teams. Georgia needs to win the East this year. I think Kirby Smart needs to take that step if Georgia wants to be the Alabama of the East.
And I think they can.
I think Kirby's goal.
And I think. You know, I think they have that. They have the pedigree. They have the name recognition. They have Athens is an unbelievable college town. They have the facilities. There's no reason why they shouldn't be. There's no reason why Georgia should have. And they didn't fall off. It's just that they didn't have the massive success, especially when the SEC has been down over the last couple of years. Because, I mean, listen, what's going on in Florida, that offense looked absolutely terrible. And I think that you have a team that's not exactly all focused. And that's something that Jim McElwain is going to have to continue to address, and he's been able to do it before. Mm-hmm. Can he do it a third time and get them back to Atlanta? I don't think so. I think it's Georgia.
I think it's Georgia's for the taking if they can avoid this controversy, quote unquote, to not linger. Because if Fromm plays well, that's just going to be a question.
Yep.
If Fromm plays well, I think Kirby would be crazy to take Fromm out if they go in and beat Notre Dame and Eason's ready. Do you really think that they could put Eason back in? I think there'd be a mutiny in Athens.
Honestly, I think it's so there's more factors. I mean, I'd love to talk in absolutes because that's what we do in media, right?
I'm not trying to be outrageous.
I just feel like
I'm a Georgia fan and I see Fromm go in and beat Notre Dame, why are we taking that?
Depends on how he looks at doing it. Is he a good game manager? You know, is he ready? I mean, I think Kirby Smart owes it to – here's also the other side of it, and the only reason why I play devil's advocate is that if I look at it and I'm a five-star guy and I'm thinking about going to, you know, Georgia, I'm like, well, okay, five-star, yeah, I know I got to play, but if all of a sudden it's easy for me to just get, you know, Wally Pipped while I'm out, okay, well, maybe that's not where I want to go. I'm not saying that's the case, and it may not happen, but I when I talked to their offensive coordinator, Chaney, down there, he basically told me it's hard for him to even recruit other quarterbacks because they know not only is Eason really good, Jake Fromm's just as good.
Right.
And so he couldn't find hardly any good third string guys or young guys to come in because they're like, this quarterback position is locked up for a long time.
That makes it really, really hard. It's a good problem to have.
Yeah, right.
It makes it difficult. And maybe Fromm pips Jacob Eason, but in 3 years, who's going to remember that when Fromm's a four-year starter? You know, if things go according to plan.
No doubt. And if he won back-to-back, you know, SEC East.
I think you can recruit that a little bit more than people can recruit against you for.
Well,
for
look at, you know, nobody knew that Jake Bentley was going to be that great when they put him in last year.
It was supposed to be McElwain.
Right. Yeah,
exactly. Brandon McElwain. He's gone now. So
he's playing. Is he playing baseball? I don't even know where he's at right now.
Baseball. I don't even remember where exactly. That's
nuts.
That speaks to it to the how quickly things can change in college football.
Indeed.
So, Peter, we're going to wrap it up, man. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll do it again sometime in this beautiful porch you got back here. I wish I had a studio like this. I just do it out of my kitchen. So,
hey, this works, man. This works.
We'll, I might just sneak in here and do the rest of my
come
podcast.
Come on,
back
that's
here.
It. $500 a month rent. I'll just charge you a podcast rental fee. That'll be perfect.
There you go. All right, man. Well, Peter, once again, SEC Network host, Campus Conversation podcast, another great college football podcast for college football fans, and an ESPN radio host as well. So, like I said this about Laura last week, if you're paying attention to college football, you turn on a game, there's a 50% chance you're going to see Laura somewhere. 50% chance you're going to be hearing Peter Burns this season as well, no matter where you turn. So, Peter, man, thanks for joining me, and we'll do it again.
Thank you, sir.
All right, and that was Peter Burns. Thank you again to Peter for joining me. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode of the College Football Country podcast. I'm going to get you guys out of here right now, but please visit the website every day, cfbcountry.com. I've got stuff going up every single day, all season long, talking college football. We had the Sunday Morning Quarterback this week, the first edition. We had a column on Justin Fuente and the revolution going on in Blacksburg on Monday. And then Tuesday, we had QB Rank, the first of many editions of hashtag QB Rank, breaking down the top performances across the country at the quarterback position. Every week, we're going to update that thing. Everybody loves their quarterbacks. We're going to rank them every single week. Right now, number two was Josh Jackson. If you're a Virginia Tech fan, check out cfbcountry.com to see who I had number one. And we will be back on Thursday night, Friday morning, with Chris Felica from College Game Day and Rossi Three Stacks, who will be back with another edition of I Aim to Tease, giving you guys all the best teasers for the week. We'll get you ready for college football week two from a Vegas perspective. Hope you guys are ready. And thank you guys again for listening. Please download, subscribe, tell your friends to subscribe, tell your enemies to subscribe, and stick around for Thursday's episode with the Bear and Ross. Until then, have a good week.